Okay, our next speaker is William Rogers from the School of Law.
Good. Hey, nice to see everybody. Thank you for inviting me. It's a wonderful conference. I think I've attended nearly every year. I was going to come here to speak truth to power, but I know you don't have any power. And I'm a lawyer, so that's out of the question. I don't know whether you noticed somebody called Roger Clemens, lawyer, reptilian. So I guess I'm going to have to speak half-truth to the weak in a reptilian way. Now, I also have to say I have many of the same feelings that an earlier speaker voiced. I'm ashamed of what I see, and I don't know, I mean, there's a moral sense requires me to hold some of this back. But I'll take a jump. By the way, a couple of legal opinions here. Is there such a thing as secret sewage? Not. Don't believe so. And if we come to it, you know, law is magical. And I actually know how to get those farmers to sign up for that business in Skagit Valley. If we get to that, I'll tell you the secret. We have some good examples. But let me turn to the state of the world here. This from New Scientist just last week on fishing worldwide. And you can see why I tell my students, you know, every problem can be solved by law. Law is magical. So every failure in the social system is a legal failure. And there are a lot of people working toward those failures. But in any event, here's a similar assumption about fishing rules worldwide are increasingly being disregarded as catches across the world shrink. The number of pirate boats flying flags of convenience from landlocked nations has boomed. Fish are falsely labeled sustainable. Inspectors are increasingly harassed or bribed. Shrimp farms employ child labor, and a fifth of all catches worldwide are illegal. I see a legal problem there. And we can extend it as well. I'm going to pass this question on to my colleague, David Montgomery. He'll be speaking in a moment. I do have something for David later in the show, but we'll get back to this question of natural disasters. Now, here's some good news. I see the cruise ships are going to come into an agreement with the Port of Seattle. And the cruise ships will not be able to discharge within a half a mile of shellfish beds, said Amy Junkowiak, a compliance specialist with the Ecology Department. Amy, if you're here, I'd love to meet you. Compliance specialists are very rare. We should put you in the Burke Museum. You see, we're hoping this will happen, and I doubt that these areas will be mined. You're going to see a half mile. There's a compliance problem there. Just have to say it. You know, when I see something like this, White River Dam blocks thousands of pink salmon. It's been going on for 30 years. It's a legal question. A child in law school could answer this. This is a public nuisance. The Attorney General tomorrow could fix this. The suit ought to be filed. Why hasn't it been? Well, choices are made. This is a complete and utter legal failure. You know, we have a concept in law of when the institution is completely run down, null and void, we can put it into receivership. So a court can actually take over, as they have the sewer operations in the city of Detroit. a court took over last year a dump on the island of Guam. Authorities couldn't handle this problem. We need to put the Attorney General into receivership. And then I see this. What a surprise. More pollutants pumped into sound than allowed by law. You know, I have to say, I do have a bias. Most laws I think should be complied with. Not all, but most of them. Certainly the pollution laws. You know, I have a solution here. Let's get those cameras out. You know, the ones that take your picture going through the red light? So you got a smile on your face, and then they just mail you the ticket. And you got to send in the fine, no haggling, no going down to the Department of Ecology, no instructions on compliance, just pay the fine. I think we ought to set up those cameras outside every outfall. Killer whales. I see this. There is a PCB Act. It's called the Toxic Substances Control Act. It was enacted in 1976. We were going to ban PCBs. This is a legal failure. This story hasn't been told effectively, so those creatures are suffering legal failure. Now, this is the kind of thing I read, hundreds of these cases. And this is just a little story, but notice it's 2007. We all know the story of the tuna fishery and the impact on dolphins. 6 million dolphins have been killed. Well, this is the latest trip to court here, and the court is saying the record that we see here gives us a compelling portrait of political meddling. Politics, that's what the court is saying. You've made a judgment, authorities, that there is no adverse impact from this fishery on dolphin populations, but your judgment is marred and false and flawed by politics. And the end result of all these cases is basically it gets sent back for reconsideration. But I see this repeatedly, improperly influenced by political concerns. Go back and try again. This is not good science. But you always get another try. And then the staff says, you know, you got to like a stand-up staff, right? In a tough time. And here's the staff in this case. We think telling these political appointees will be gone in weeks. We think we can package either decision to demonstrate that we are conservation-minded, proactive, and are dedicated to recovering dolphins as well as cooperating with our international partners. Wow. Hey, it's the year of the reef. Did you know? And the reefs, of course, are largely gone. By the way, on this business of sea level rise, yeah, the big figures come from Antarctica. Just tell me what phenomena are rolling back what's going on in Antarctica. Is it Kyoto? Is it plans for a stronger Kyoto? Nothing is happening. Everything is in the channel. I'm reading cases just within weeks of new coal-burning power plants, not a breath in the record about global warming. I'm reading cases about the opening of new gas fields here in the United States, not a breath in the record about global warming. Now, there are a lot of breaths and a lot of records about this thing, but many parts of it are simply ignored. Year of the Reef, Tom Lovejoy says, this is the single most profound environmental change I've ever learned about my entire career. Tremendous impacts on coral reefs now from ocean acidification in the science issue in December 14th, 2007. And in the same issue of Science, here's the study, declining wild salmon populations in relation to parasites from farmed salmon, study in British Columbia. Everybody who's in the room, I know a lot of you know about it. Many of you have worked on this issue or are familiar with it. This is dramatic, effective reality here, and very sad story as the parasites spread to the wild populations, and the wild populations will go extinct. The legal response here would be to show cause immediately to every one of these fish farms in the ocean why they should not rush off to find home on the land. Dramatically effective and important study. No response yet. And I read about the walruses. You know, we all know about this and the disaster up there. I was talking to my friend Charlie Edwardson. His Eskimo name is Ituk, and he lives in Barrow. And he said he just met an old walrus female who had to swim hundreds of miles. And when she finally got to shore, there's no ice out there. They have to rest on ice. That is gone. We've lost two Texas versions of ice off of Alaska in the last few years, and the effects are dramatic. And here they now crowd together in available places, and that's where you get the stampedes and these enormous deaths. Well, Charlie said this poor female walrus, she'd long ago lost her pup, of course, but when she got ashore, she slept for 4 days. Couldn't wake her up, exhausted. Well, you see this and you say, how's the law responding to this? Well, I look and I see the only big marine mammal action going on in our region is the prosecution of four or five macaw fishermen for going after a gray whale. No, really, I mean, if you're in working in the U.S. Attorney's Office on this case, shame. Put that one aside and start doing something about the walrus. You know, does everybody remember, you know, locking up the felon, right, who steals the goose from off the common, but letting the greater felon loose who steals the common from the goose? This one is so painful. ESA, how are we doing? Well, receivership. This is basically the account of Inspector General report on Julie McDonald, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Fish and Wildlife and Parks. Very sad and very dreadful in the politicization of these important biological questions. I won't dwell on that, but I'll show you how the law deals with it. Here's the Assistant Regional Solicitor who's supposed to sign off on these questions. And this lawyer said he has not surnamed a document, meaning he didn't sign off on this. And these rulings dealing with designation of critical habitat, dealings with listings, reviews, and so on. The Assistant Regional Solicitor has not surnamed a document in 6 years due to the legal insufficiency of the documents. Hey, it just is processed. Out it comes. He states that he looks at the rule, the rationale within the rule, past judicial decisions, whether it is factually supported, and whether there are any hopes of public support. He doesn't sign on. But things happen because we're in the process. Bonneville Power Administration. You know, Judge Redden is dealing with the dam management down there. What do we read about? Hey, anonymous phone messages. This is the kind of thing I hate to show you. Secrets. And the call comes in, and the allegations are that Bonneville intentionally violated biological fish restrictions during the first part of April, end of March, to satisfy its hydropower commitments, and sought to declare a system emergency to conceal the variance. Well, Judge Redden makes a few findings on this. BPA voluntarily violated fish protection measures to meet its sales obligations. This was not a system emergency. It was a marketing error. And ESA listed salmon and steelhead paid the price. This the law does not permit. Too bad. Sad. FEMAT scientists, we're not listening to them. Let me tell you what's happened to the Forest Service. Receivership again. Many of you know Mark Ray. And he's been running the Forest Service for a number of years. This is a question, a case involving the use of fire retardants. And Secretary Mark Ray, by a district judge in Montana, January 11th, Chief Judge Malloy orders Secretary Mark Ray to show cause why he should not be held in contempt and jailed. Why? Because in this very simple NEPA ESA case, this is Judge Malloy speaking, he sees a strategy of circumventing rather than complying with NEPA and the ESA. In my view, the Forest Service is in contempt of the law and the prior orders of this court. The Forest Service had no real intention to comply with the court's orders. The Forest Service position is duplicitous at best. No intention to comply with the court's orders, consistent with its apparent strategy to feign compliance with the law, while in reality disregarding it. It's a sad situation. And then the analysis with respect to the operation of the Columbia River Power System. This is NOAA Fisheries going into receivership. An analytical sleight of hand, manipulating the variables. This is the decision of the Ninth Circuit, 2007. One comment about this is the book on the censorship of Jim Hansen, and this is a quote from Michael Griffin, head of NASA. And I have to say, hey, I don't worry about the cultural opinions of the farmers in the Skagit Valley. That's not the problem. The problem is the cultural opinions, in this instance, of the head of NASA. This is the entity that controls a good part of the climate research in the United States. And I want you to take this one home because it's an interesting comment on the climate issues that we have. And Griffin says, first of all, I don't think it's within the power of human beings to assume that the climate does not change, as millions of years of history have shown, of course. And second of all, I guess I would ask which human beings, where and when, are to be accorded the privilege of deciding that what we have right here today, right now, is the best climate for all other human beings. That is, fixing climate change, he's saying, is a rather arrogant position for people to take. You know, the Washington State Legislature is putting climate change into the factors to consider under our Growth Management Act. Phenomenal. And for David Montgomery, I would suggest an amendment. Gravity. This would have a greater impact than the recognition of climate change. Maybe it'll happen. I'm sure David will talk about that. About the Washington hydraulics law, there's so little of it left, but I have to tell you, the legislature did really identify a real problem, and that was the fact that construction of facilities to house sexually violent predators required an override of the hydraulics law. Yes. Okay. Now let me, I'm going to conclude with a couple of thoughts. First of all, we now have this incredible culvert case. We were here 27 years ago with phase two of US v. Washington, and it was not adequately implemented. I guess I would say to the governor wants to clean up Puget Sound, and someone flies in and hands them this incredible culvert decision based on the treaties, saying the state has a duty to repair culverts that interfere with fish passage, that this is a tremendous opportunity to reframe, to re-challenge, to raise and pursue issues of protecting Puget Sound. So I'm hoping that something will happen here, but it didn't happen when we had the chance in 1980. Now let me close with two thoughts. Governor Gregoire, so far, is disappointed over the culvert's decision. Hope she changes her mind. I want to, as I say, give you two things to think about. Number one, when you hear about the Exxon Valdez, let me tell you what's going on there. Two issues are alive. You remember the spill, 1989. The punitive damage award, 1994, $5 billion awarded to all the fishing people. It's been in the courts ever since. After 15 years, eventually the U.S. and the state of Alaska said there's ongoing damage to the fisheries up there, and therefore, under the so-called reopener clause, the Exxon is duty-bound to pay an additional $100 million for restoration of the fisheries. On the punitive damages, that is still in court, still alive, and I want to give you one quote from one of the survivors of this particular problem. What had happened? The money was to be allocated between the 32,000 fishermen who had lost their jobs as a result of the spill. 6,000 of them have died during the interim as the $5 billion have waxed and waned in the courts. And this is a quote that I'll close with from Kelly Kvasnikov, who's written his own personal book on the Exxon Valdez. He was a fisherman up there. He's now working down here with the Snoqualmie tribe. And he says, he reminds us that 6,000 of the original 32,000 plaintiffs seeking punishment, that is the punitives, are now dead, so they're waiting for their payday. And this is what he says. Exxon's chief strategists have turned out to be true, and the case has stretched into the 21st century. After 18 years of justice has turned out to be misspelled, it is just us. Those with the deep pockets that can manufacture legal arguments, use the law, buy science, keep Supreme Court justices and presidents in their hip pockets and play them like puppets when it is to their benefit. It's sad, but we're going to see an end to this about next June. So June 2008, this case will be resolved. Thank you.